You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to a Black Monday edition of the show. Russell Smith reporting for duty. First show of April as we pick up the pieces and try to make sense of a roller coaster weekend for Tennessee basketball. On the one hand, Bear, Houston crash Tucker Harlan. On the one hand, Tennessee made the Elite Eight and had arguably the best season in school history. But on the other hand, who knows? Who knows when we'll have our next opportunity to get to a Final Four? Yesterday's loss, the kind of defeat that sticks with you forever. It's not something you can just shake off in one day.
We'll never get over Nacho Grande.
Nacho Grande.
Yeah. You don't get that riff. That's the most disappointing thing ever. Airplane.
All right. We're 1 minute in. You have thoroughly lost me. Does anybody have any idea what the hell Bear is talking about right now?
It was a movie reference.
I can't say I do.
All right. Houston.
I've never seen Airplane.
He never got over it.
You've never seen Airplane?
I don't think so.
Yeah, put it on your list. You'd enjoy it. I think it stands up. Houston, Bear and I tapped the keg of despair and just drowned ourselves in it yesterday. Just opened a vein. It was painful. Usually voluntary reaction, and we've been through many a painful defeat and shared together, and usually by the end of that, I usually feel better.
It's therapeutic almost, right? That's what we claim.
Usually, yesterday, though, and I don't think this has ever happened before, I actually felt worse as it went on. And I think you're about to say something that I said, which was, we knew exactly what it was going to be. I thought that we would be in foul trouble. I thought we'd be angry at the officials. None of that surprised me. And so I was ready for it in the moment. And it wasn't until afterwards that I got redneck mad about it. And here we are 24 hours later. I'm still a little chapped.
Well, I mean, you're just so stunned, right? When you suffer a trauma, you know, like say you get shot and you don't, you know, people say they don't really feel it. I was just numb. And then the pain started. But you, HK.
It was exactly what I thought it would be. It was exactly what we all talked about. I thought our only hope was to have a big lead at the half with Dalton Kinnett going crazy to where maybe, just maybe, they'd say, you know what, maybe Tennessee is just that good and this guy can become the new face of the tournament. We had a, 11-point lead?
Yeah.
They called the timeout. They came out and went on a whatever it ended up being, like a
12-0 run, yeah.
Or a 15-2 run, mm-hmm. Or whatever. You know, they have a 2-point lead at the half.
After the timeout, there was another flurry of just nonstop.
Yeah.
Either Edie was at the free throw line shooting two, or he was standing in the paint for 45 seconds, finally getting the ball, and then.
See, that's funny because my and I'm not saying that stuff didn't happen, but my recollection of why is Braden Smith had a blow-by straight out of the timeout, just right to the hoop.
They had a few of those.
Lawyer then, had at least one, too.
And know. Then Zakai, really for the only time all season, lost his head and took a terrible three early in the shot clock that might have been an air ball. And just like that, it was a 7-point game all of a sudden, and it felt like
15.
So, it's frustrating. I'm not surprised. You know, 72 points is what we give up. If you had told me that coming in and that they would have been 3 of 15 from three-point range,
yeah.
I would have liked our chances, and I did like our chances. When Connect hit, there was a scramble around the seven-minute mark, and Connect hit a three right in front of our bench to tie it at 57 with 7 minutes to go. And I honestly thought, all right, he's going to put us on our shoulders. He's going to do it, and he's going to get this thing across the finish line. And that was his last three of the game. And he just kind of ran out of gas. He had a couple of decent looks at the end that would not fall.
No.
And I feel like that's the difference. 72 points is – we've won a lot of games where we hold our opponent to 72. And if we could have gotten around that 75 thing, I think we are drinking from the keg of glory. That's what hurts so much right now is it was right there, man. It was right there for the taking, and we could not take it. My only hope as we begin to process this and look towards the future, you know, Purdue talked a lot about how they were on a mission and what happened to them against Fairleigh Dickinson last year was an embarrassment, and they used that as motivation. And, you know, we always use the 1998 national championship team as a reference point. And I see some similarities here where after 1997, we lost the greatest player in Tennessee football history, Peyton Manning. People thought, well, how are we going to, you know, it's going to take a while to rebuild after that. But that 98 team talked about getting their tails kicked by Nebraska in the Orange Bowl 97, and they used that as motivation to get back. Purdue suffered a humiliating defeat last year against Fairleigh Dickinson and have used that as a battle cry, as a mantra, all off season long, all season long. And even after winning yesterday, you could tell they're not satisfied. They think they're going to win the national championship. I'm skeptical. We'll see what happens. But I wonder for us, Houston, can our group, we have a really nice core of seniors coming back next year and some nice prospects already on the roster who are developing. Obviously, we need a piece or two from the portal that we can plug in and depend right away. Can we use what happened yesterday as a battle cry, a rallying point, and say, all right, we've been to the Sweet 16 before, we've gotten through, been to the Elite Eight twice as a program. It's time to take that next step. Nothing less than a Final Four is acceptable, and come hell or high water, we are going to run through a wall to get there next year.
I think maybe certain players can. I think you lose too much from your starting lineup for it to be like the team rallying cry to the level where I think it would work. I think if I'm Jonas Adu, that's absolutely my – now, there's also some, you know, talk today that maybe he was under the weather for the last two games, which would certainly explain why he didn't show up against Creighton and then was, I mean, non-existent really against Purdue. If he was sick, I don't know that it's the, oh, we gave it everything we had and we just weren't good enough. We just have to get better.
He didn't look great against Texas.
Yeah, if he were sick, I wish somebody would come out and say that.
Yeah, that's not fair. Because he's catching it yeah, worse than anybody,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, and I feel like we would all pump the brakes at least a little bit if that were true. Barnes had the opportunity to do that yesterday and did not. And
did anybody ask him directly?
Well, yeah. Yeah, his quote about Adu was he was getting buried, basically. He was letting Edie catch the ball too close to the basket, and it would have been very easy for Barnes to simply say, well, he's been under the weather. We've had a stomach bug going around the team. He gave it all he had, and he ran out of gas. That's what you do in that situation if your player's sick. So I'm not saying he's not sick. I'm just saying that if he was, there is absolutely nothing to lose by not making that public. So, you know, tell us so that we can defend him from the beating that he's taken in the eye of the public right now, because it never comes down to one player, but man, he you thought you were going to get more than that out of him yesterday.
Yeah, certainly. And that's why it just, even when he's been I don't want to say bad, but even when he struggled, it's never he pulled up for like a 9-foot jumper and left it like a foot short.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't I know, you know, it's the Elite Eight. I mean, sometimes nerves get to guys. So maybe that's what it was, but he didn't look he certainly
nerves,
didn't look himself.
And then there's you were second team all SEC.
Right, right.
And things were so bad if you're not sick that we had to put in an 18-year-old green freshman to guard the most dominant big in college basketball since who?
Shaquille O'Neal.
I was going to say, yeah, man.
Yeah, it's bitterly disappointing. I hope that we get some clarity on the ADU situation going forward. But as I said, this is portal season, and we've got basically two spots to play with right now, and we'll see what happens. I think there's there are a couple of guys that you wonder if they won't be back next year, and that could open up some more space for Rick Barnes to play with in the portal. But obviously we are losing an all-time great in Dalton Knecht, and it's going to be hard to replace, but they've got to find something because, as I said, I think we have a nice core of senior veteran players to build around for next season. And I think we'll be right back there in the hunt with a chance to make another run next year. Aaron Torres is going to join us here in just a few minutes. And for those of you who want to hear us whine about the officials, I'm not going to do that. I think Bear might do that. I know Aaron will. So that will we will give you a taste of that coming up here in just a little bit, and I get it because EDU, that was frustrating. There were definitely a couple of calls that could have been made that were not made that might have had an impact on the outcome. So we'll talk about that. Big news here locally today, and I'm surprised. I did not see this coming. Kelly Harper is out after 5 seasons as head coach of the Lady Vols. Danny White announcing Harper's firing today, 1 week after Tennessee lost to NC State in the NCAA tournament second round. By the way, that NC State crew, shout out to friend of the show, Houston Fancher. Both Wolfpack teams, men and women, headed to the Final Four this year.
Did you say coach and search?
Yeah, I'm surprised. Sound the horns. The job is open. Kelly Harper is out. And Danny White, a shrewd move here. We did not get to this Friday because there was so much, but there was a pretty good article in the New Sentinel about Kelly Harper's contract, her buyout situation. And one of the key takeaways was after today, on April 1st, today, her buyout basically dropped by $2 million. They will owe her $2.2 million. It would have been over $4 million if they had fired her before. So Danny White waited until April 1st for that buyout to drop, and then he went ahead and made the move. Houston, are you surprised that Danny White decided to move on Kelly Harper?
No. I was surprised there were so many people that said he didn't want to ruffle feathers. He didn't want to rock that boat. Danny White cares about few things as much as he cares about money.
Winning.
Well, I mean, those are hand in hand.
Yeah.
If you're not getting the job. And this is what I said a couple weeks ago, and someone called in and said, oh, no, he'll wait. You know, that's a program that has been profitable, that can be profitable. The arena's big enough. The support is great enough to where if you have a winning product, you can fill the arena. You can make a lot of money. We're moving into this NIL space where we don't know where that money's going to come from if we do start paying the players. This is a way to offset some of that to where football isn't footing the bill for all your other sports. This is a very historic program that needs help. And I was stunned that people thought he wouldn't pull the trigger. This is what we all, I think, agreed that needed to happen. He made the move. And I'm very anxious to see who he gets and what direction he decides to point this program with the next hire.
Well, that's the big question. We don't have a list. I don't think anybody does. I've seen our guy J-Mo had a couple of names I'm not familiar with. I do think that Kara Lawson will figure into this thing. I mean, we've been tracking her career for this very reason for a couple of years.
She's been on the drives radar for a while now, yeah.
And I know there are going to be a lot of people say, you know what, it's time to go outside the family. It's time to stop spinning our wheels and trying to find the next Pat. Let's just go hire a winner. And that may ultimately be what Danny White decides to do. I will just say that, and that was kind of my feeling as well. I had not been keeping up with Duke closely. I went back and looked at what Kara has done there today when this news dropped. And they quietly made the Sweet 16 this year. They went 22-12 in her fourth season, lost an 8-point game to UConn over the weekend, which they fought hard in. She was 26-7, 14-4 in the ACC in year three. So she took that program from a rough spot and built it into back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances. I looked at her recruiting class that she signed this past season. She signed a 5-star and then 3 4-star prospects. I don't know if she could bring them with her, but you hear about Kelly Harper. The number one criticism I hear is that she doesn't recruit high school players well enough. Looks like Kara checks that box. The number one criticism I would have just as a casual observer who watches a handful of games is I don't think Kelly's teams played hard. I don't think they competed at near the level that Pat's teams competed at, that Dawn Staley and Kim Mulkey's teams competed at. And this is tough, Houston, because there is a big part of me that's ready to move on. We need to purposefully break from the Pat Summit lineage. And again, that's maybe what ends up happening. But both you and I know this is no shot at Kelly Harper or Holly Warlick or anybody else, but Kara Lawson is cut from a different cloth.
100%.
She is a, Rick Barnes, Danny Hurley type competitor, fierce competitor who I don't know if she can recruit well. I don't know if she's a good enough X's and O's coach. These are things I'm not qualified to comment on, but she will demand effort. I know that. Her teams will not
stand around.
Yeah, you won't see the lollygagging, quite frankly, that I saw from the team since Pat left.
Just real quick, you mentioned her recruiting class currently at Duke. She is in a battle with UConn for the number one player in the country. Whichever of those two teams ultimately signs her will have the number one class for this year.
There are a lot of other names out there that I'm just unfamiliar with. The coach at Florida Gulf Coast, the coach at Grand Canyon, some others that I know our fan base is high on and people that follow it closely are high on. Kara Lawson deserves consideration, I would say.
I feel like if she wasn't part of, Tennessee and the family, if she had just gone to some other university and she had won a national championship, she would absolutely be at the top of the list.
Quick timeout. Aaron Torres joins the festivities. If you don't want to hear about Zach Edey and how he's officiated unfairly, don't continue to listen to the program. However, if you want to dwell in that little piece of misery and blame the fact that we are no longer playing on unfair officiating, then stay tuned because we're about to scratch that itch for you. Aaron Torres coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio. Back here on The Drive, Fan Run Radio, Russell, Bear, Houston, and Tucker back with you on a Monday, April 1st edition of the show. No fooling, it's the great and powerful Aaron Torres helping us kick things off. AT, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, guys. I'm doing good. You know, it was weird when Bear said, hey, we need some Kelly Harper insight. We want you on. I was like, I don't really know much about it. But, I mean, if you guys really want me that bad, I mean, I'm happy to come on and discuss as much as you need.
Nobody does coaching searches the way Tennessee does coaching searches. Just remember that.
Well, I will say really quick, it's funny, a guy I don't know well, But Wes Rucker, who I know has covered the beat forever, and I think he does an excellent job. I just don't know him. But he's always said, he's like, there's just never a dull day covering Tennessee. And it's like, dude, you come off of yesterday. Obviously, there's a lot to discuss there. And then, obviously, to make the move and the women's side that they did today, it's surreal. It's stunning. It's Tennessee. It's, you know, keeps you guys busy, I know. But, yeah, I don't have too many Kelly Harper hot takes for you today, unfortunately.
Well, let's stay on the men's side then. Aaron, you tried to warn us for weeks. And I think the warnings were, for those that listen to The Drive here on Fan Run Radio, the warnings were heated. Houston and I knew exactly what was going to happen yesterday. Nobody's surprised that the game was officiated the way it was. It doesn't make it any easier in the aftermath when you're talking about a free throw disparity of 33-11, multiple guys fouling out. It just,
what were fouls, 25-12? Something like that?
Yeah, just an unpleasant game to watch. Tell us something to make it feel better, AT.
You know,
he's got nothing. He's got nothing.
To make it feel better, here's the sad part. I don't think there's anything, and it's just, you know, listen, what I would say, and I said this on my show last night, I said it on Twitter, listen, and this is something we've talked about previously. Edie is a very talented player, and it feels like any time that I say anything negative, it's a criticism of a 21, 22-year-old kid. But, Russ, this goes back to what I've been talking about since December when I was the hot take artist that didn't understand basketball. There is no player in the history of the sport of basketball who is so talented that he can draw 16 fouls on one end of the court and commit one on the other. And by the way, the one they called was a two-handed shove out of bounds that it wasn't even in the court of play. And so I feel awful for Tennessee fans because, and I listen, the tournament is all about draws. Eventually you're going to play really good teams. I didn't like this matchup for Tennessee. Not to make it about my bracket, I had Purdue, Tennessee in the Elite Eight. I had Purdue winning. And I think the game largely went down how I expected it to. Now, again, I wish there wasn't a 16-1 foul discrepancy just in terms of whistles with Zach Edey involved. I wish there wasn't a plus 22 free throw discrepancy, as you just mentioned. But it's disappointing that even though I largely, and all of us have talked about it for the last 4 or 5 weeks, even though I'm disappointed that I was hoping it wouldn't go down the way that it did, it went down exactly the way that it did. And obviously I know Tennessee fans over the last 24 hours have been very frustrated.
Yeah, I don't really have a complaint just as a fan of any of the fouls that were called against Tennessee. I think they were probably all good calls. And Tennessee is one of the more physical teams in the country. We foul a lot. Nobody is denying that. But there were a couple of plays, the elbow to Awaka's head, the charge that Triple J looked like he drew right in front of the restricted area that wasn't called, the shove on Triple J, kind of shoved him out of bounds, grabbed a rebound, and then Tennessee got called for a foul. There were a couple of those.
The jump ball where he's climbing all over Josiah.
And Aaron, you know, in these games, it comes down a possession, a call here and there can make all the difference in the world. And I just wish that, you know, they had called it a little bit more. I know there's going to be more fouls on Tennessee. Guys, 7-4, 300, like, I get that. There's going to be more fouls called on Tennessee. I know it's not going to be even, but, man, it would have been nice to have just, you know, one or two more called against him.
Well, and it's funny because the guy that I've warned you guys about, not only Zach Edey, but in the media, the guy Kevin Sweeney, CBB Central on Twitter, you know, he comes after me and says, oh, you know, Torres has the support of the Village Idiots about Zach Edey, and he's still wrong on it. The Village Idiots, I assume, or I don't know if it's all basketball fans or just Tennessee fans or whatever, but he calls everybody a Village Idiot who disagrees. And then this morning, you know what he tweets out? Because somebody tagged me on it. He tweeted out, well, you know, listen, I can't argue. Listen, I think Edey is really good at avoiding fouls on defense, but I can't argue that he – I can't – basically his insinuation was that anyone who questioned anything about Zach Edey was an idiot, and those were his exact words. Then he goes on Twitter today and he says, you know, I can't deny that probably there are a couple calls on the other end that could have gone the other way. And it's like, this is my only point that I have been trying to make.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is what sucks about social media is, you know, Listen, I'm not fancy. I don't pay for the 280,000 characters or unlimited characters or whatever. There's only so much you can get across. The only point I've never said that fouls should be even 50-50 in every game, which is how people took it back in December.
Yeah.
I've never said that he has never committed that another team hasn't committed a foul or even that Tennessee doesn't commit a foul. All I have said is you can't tell me that it can be called so definitive on one end of the court and that guy doesn't commit a single foul on the other end. Russ, I don't go along. Just one last point. I've actually been very impressed with his defensive play because I do think at 7'4", he alters a lot of shots. He obviously had the big block shot late. But again, you just can't tell me. As you said, Russ, all those bang-bang calls in the paint, you can't tell me that there were 16 times that a Tennessee player committed a foul on him. And frankly, in the paint, not one that he committed. Because again, the only foul he got called for was a shove in the back. So that's been my frustration from December on. And I don't think yesterday changed anything of it from a fundamental perspective. And I'll wrap by saying I still think he's a great player. But everything you said, I ultimately agree with.
There's no doubt. He's a great player. He's a force of nature. Any school would love to have him on their team.
By the way, can I ask you something real quick?
Sure.
You know, he went after Rick Barnes yesterday in the post game, and I thought our Torres on the Balls account, by the way, I know I've told everybody this before, I don't run all of the team accounts under my name. We have a great intern who does it, and he pointed out, my guy who runs the Torres on the Balls account pointed out, there might not be a high major coach who takes more chances on guys with zero stars, one star. I mean, how many stars did Sakai Ziegler have? How many stars did whoever? I don't know the recruiting profiles or whatever. But I felt like, listen, Zachy, I get it. People did probably doubt you coming out of high school. In their defense, by the way, you didn't start playing basketball until you were 16 years old, so it's not like they had a lot to work off of. But the counter is, like, felt kind of weird going after Rick Barnes after the game last night because you said any school in the country would love to have him. And he made the post-game press conference about, oh, Rick Barnes never believed in me. It's like, there aren't very many coaches who take more chances on two-star guys than Rick Barnes does. Grant Williams, by the way, is another example.
Not terribly likable. Not terribly. But between that comment, dropping the F-bomb on TV, one of the guys on our morning show made an excellent point, you know, about how, you know, he said, we're bleeping winners, man, on national TV. And it's like, isn't this the guy that lost to FDU? I don't think that's your reputation. Mm-hmm. So,
Hey, you can, and by the way, you can say everybody doubted us. You can say we had a lot to prove. Yeah, like you said, your reputation literally wasn't until this year bleeping winners. I thought the Rick Barnes, it just felt, maybe it's my, you know, I'm on in Knoxville, but it just felt weird to me in that moment, and especially Rick Barnes. I mean, Rick Barnes isn't John Calipari that if you don't have a five-star next to your name, he's not even going to give you a call. I mean, like I said, there's not very many high-profile coaches who have taken more quote-unquote chances on guys, frankly, just done great evaluating on guys like Sakai Ziegler, Grant Williams, et cetera, than Rick Barnes.
Aaron Torres with us this afternoon. All right, Aaron, looking at the Final Four, how do you think Burns and is it Diarra at NC State? I think that's a very good big man tandem. One of the very disappointing things of Tennessee was to watch how little Adu competed against Edey yesterday. But do you think those two pose a better threat to Edey? And then can anybody stop your UConn Huskies?
I don't know that they do, to be honest. I just think, and I think this was one of the reasons I didn't love Tennessee yesterday, you have a lot of wings and guards, I think you just have to have a ton of big bodies to throw at him. And, you know, NC State has those two guys, but I don't know if it's enough. I really don't. And they're an incredible story. DJ Burns is an incredible story. you know, I think a lot of people kind of got to know him for some of the passing. For him to have 29 points yesterday in an Elite Eight game is incredible. As far as UConn's concerned, listen, you guys have seen Alabama up close and in person, literally in your building. I, as a UConn alum, am not dismissing the possibility. I mean, Alabama, I think in their Elite Eight game, hit 16 threes. Now, you can argue UConn's a better team defensively, whatever. But you hit 16 threes in any game, you can beat anybody. And I remember you asked me about Creighton last week, Russ, and when they beat UConn, they hit about 15 in that game to beat UConn. And so I'm not putting it past Alabama. I would still take UConn. And I will say, you know, listen, and this isn't about the refereeing thing, but UConn really, they got the Klingon kid who absolutely dominated Illinois. But, you know, he picks up an early foul or two. UConn doesn't actually have a ton of big bodies against Purdue. So I still think UConn should be the prohibitive favorite. But I think both matchups would potentially be tough for them. I mean, if they played NC State, I don't really see the scenario where they lose that game. But I think both matchups could be tough for them. I'm not trying to be, you know, fatalistic or not say nice things about my team. But I do think that Alabama team scares me just because of the way they can hit that three-point shot.
Yeah, I mean, I talked with you about it yesterday, and because they are capable of hitting, of ripping 17 threes. I mean, they can get really, really hot.
Your boy Hurley, he'll study the Tennessee film. I mean, if you have the athletes, and I think UConn does, to get on them and fight through all the screens on the perimeter.
Yeah. Especially Sears, because he's the engine that makes them go.
Yeah, and the clean kid, you got the rim protector to, I mean, that's mm-hmm. – because they are the ultimate threes and two and layup team. Like, they do not shoot mid-range, just will not shoot it.
And Nelson will foul himself out of a game quick. I think he did against us.
And they're not super big in the paint. And I do think you have to have a size thing. It's funny. I do an NIL interview every week with one of the UConn players, Hassan Diarra, who was excellent in that Illinois game. But I talked to him this morning, and, you know, they are very aware. Basically, you know, they haven't really broken down the Alabama tape yet. But he said, "Russ, I don't know if you're coaching in your free time and you didn't tell anybody or what." But he said exactly what you said. He said, "We know we got to get out on them. We got to fight through screens, and then you just got to funnel everything into the paint, because as we saw against Illinois, if you get into the paint against UConn, you're going to have trouble finishing against Donovan Klingon if you don't have the size to match up with them like Purdue did." So, Russ, I don't know if you already heard my podcast that isn't even out yet, or if you're coaching your free time and you got insight that nobody else does, but I talked to one of UConn's players this morning, and he basically gave me the same scouting report you just did.
Well, I did win 78% of my games in KYS, 8 and under. My first year coaching, we went to the championship game. Some are calling me the Wooden of West Knoxville, Aaron, but I don't like to beat my own
– How many – is that like a – 11 and two.
Well,
how many games did you
play? Yeah, we were 11-3.
It's his star player went down with strep throat.
Yeah, well, we had to battle through some injuries and things like that.
The day before the championship.
Yeah. Would have cut down the nets, but it's all good. It's all good.
When did the 30 for 30 come out? Good Lord.
I've got the film crew. Following me right now. Yeah, this will be a part of it. This will be a part of it. Thank you, Aaron. We appreciate you, my friend. We will stay in touch for sure. Football season just around the corner. We're into this college baseball thing here in Knoxville, and we got a women's coaching search to get to. So the cause endures and the dream lives on.
I will tell you, man, keep fighting the fight. I love coming out with you guys. You let me know when you need me. When you come up for air from that Nico practice film, Russ, because I know that's the next 6 months of your life, let me know when you need me, okay?
We call him Polynesian Peyton around here.
I like that. That's great. All right. I'll talk to you guys
Thanks, soon. Aaron. Appreciate you. Aaron Torres at Aaron_Torres, Fox Sports Radio. Aaron Torres online. And a friend of all things Tennessee. He is not on the list.
No.
Been with us for a long time.
Yeah. What's he go back to 2016? 8 years
Been
now?
With us for a long time now. Yes. He's a made man.
What was he doing? Some graffiti?
In these parts.
You never. Sometimes with Aaron, man, he's you never know.
It's just so frustrating. I said this on Voluntary Reaction yesterday. You know, there is a luck component to all of this. And Alabama, the only reason they have one Final Four and we have none right now is because they got to place a six seed in Clemson for the right to go there. Now, I give them credit for beating North Carolina in an epic game, but I don't think Alabama would have fared any differently against Purdue than we did. I think that UConn will beat them decisively. And it's just a shame that matchups are such a big role in all this. And I suppose there's an alternate universe where we did get that two seed that Arizona got in the West and would have played Alabama for a chance to go to the Final Four on Saturday.
You don't see any scenario where Alabama could pull the upset?
I mean, they would have to hit at least 15 threes.
Yeah. And they're fully capable. Yeah.
They're capable of doing it, but from what I've seen, Connecticut is just
they're a machine.
Yeah, they're I would be surprised.
It's been over 2 years since they played a close tournament game.
Yep.
I am really the only way I'm going to watch the finals will be if it's UConn and Purdue, just simply to see how they're going to officiate that game, because I'm telling you, big from UConn, he can go toe-to-toe with Edie.
I think if Alabama were playing UConn on Monday in the championship game, they would have a better opportunity, a better chance. But I think with basically an entire week to prepare, Danny Hurley and his staff do such a good job. I think they will have the perfect game plan out there, and their players, I can't imagine they would take a day off in the Final Four. So I think they're going to get the best effort there, and I think they will win. And I think they'll win the national championship and become the first team. And how long to go back-to-back? I think you go back to – is it
Florida.
Florida, probably.
Oh, wow.
What was that, 06, 07 or 05, 06?
I think it was 06, 07.
Okay.
Quick timeout. The drive continues. We'll open up the phone lines, 865-546-8200, if you want to jump in. 546-8200. Back with more right after this. It's just one of those days when you don't want to wake up. Everything is, everybody sucks. You don't really know why, but you want to justify. And someone's head off, no human contact. And if you interact, your life is on contract. Your best bet is to stay away, mother. It's just one of those days. He says, she says, give me something to break. Do you find yourself just raging out sporadically today, Bear? I do want to – it would feel good, for example, just to take a laptop or something and just smash it on a rock. Wouldn't that feel – just gets rid of some of that just negative energy?
Either that or really get into it with neighborhood crazy guy.
You want to go fight yelling man.
I don't know about
Was that
fight.
Him out there today with the shaved head?
Did I can't – he might have gotten a haircut.
Wow. Sad.
Look good.
Yeah, but he lost a little bit of his – luster.
His Charles Manson-like hair.
What'd you watch last night? I was feeling so bad. I went back and watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I rewatched that original recently.
It has that quality that great movies do where it gets better on the second watch. And there's some great lines in it.
I know you.
Yeah. He said,
it was dumber than that.
No, it was dumber than that. That was the line. No, it was dumber. I'm here to do the devil's business. It was dumber than that.
What a great line. I'm here to do the devil's business.
Wow. Yeah, I watched that.
He flambés that broad.
And it was great because I lose myself in the movie, and only periodically, it's a long movie, over 2 hours, and every now and then I think, oh, wait a minute, yeah, I'm still in mourning, oh, it really hurts. But then I'd lose myself in the movie, and as soon as it was over, I was just right back to, oh, mad.
I watched a lot of Man versus Food and Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I just switched it over to that channel, channel that is.
I did some compulsive eating, too.
Food Network.
Yesterday. There's were commenting I was eating jelly beans during the voluntary reaction. I was going on sugar high. And then
somebody did inquire about who's eating.
That was me. And my wife brought back, she went to our family Thanksgiving dinner, which I, you know, we had the Easter dinner, which I had voluntary reactions. So she, I had like ham and turkey and all that good holiday food after that. So I stuffed myself and then I ate like pie after that too. Oh man, so much food. How did you fill the void, Cress? Did you go fishing or something?
Prime rib.
Really?
That's what mama made. I wasn't going to turn that down.
Okay.
Tucker?
Did I do? I listened to voluntary reaction.
Tucker's still a young guy. Like, he's probably still in control of his emotions. He hasn't really been through any real, like, lose a job, get broken up with, like, real, you know, adult heartache. He probably handles things
definitely
better.
Can't say I've been broken up with.
Oh, Tucker. I mean, who would leave this?
He does the breaking up.
Hamburgers and whiskey is a good go-to.
Yeah. So, how did you dull the pain of another NCAA tournament exit? 865-546-8200. Your number to get on the show, 546-8200. I did watch the highlights of the Game 3 win yesterday at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, Tony V and the boys. I need some Tennessee baseball coverage to wash away the rain. Tony Vitello can be our black hole sun.
Black hole sun.
Emphatic Game 3.
Xander Seacrest. Where has that been all my life? Xander, my man. 102 pitches of shutout baseball. Volunteers get it done. That felt good. It doesn't come close to canceling out the pain of losing in basketball, but after getting run ruled for the first time in program history Friday and thinking, oh, my God. Oh, Tony, not like this.
You did that against a guy that's been carrying a batting average of close to 520 for a lot of the year.
Tony saw that Friday night, and then Georgia saw the next 2 days were two lefties. And
we throw our lefty junk ballers out there.
And Georgia, I think, got a – I mean, they're a good team, good hitting team, but they – maybe they got exposed a little bit. I mean, just the way their roster's built.
I can't remember what it was.
They can't hit a lefty.
Something happened earlier in the game on Friday that it just felt like we got completely taken out of our spot. And I was mentally the team didn't look like they had it.
That seven run.
Wasn't there something fluky in there, though? Like, was there an error?
No, I thought it was just bad pitching.
Was it yesterday or Saturday when we had the fluky base running
Saturday,
play?
Saturday, Saturday.
We
that
ended
was
up
awesome.
With the bases loaded. The Georgia catcher just melted down.
Yeah. Well, the pitcher was standing in his way, so he couldn't make the throw to second. So then he like fakes the throw to first.
Was there nobody on first?
Well, the guy
was
running to
at
first.
Second.
No, I'm saying, did they not have a defender to catch the ball from first?
When they
first?
Panned over, I couldn't tell because it was a tight shot. When they panned over, it looked like it, but
seemed
maybe
like
not.
That would have been the easy play to make, but I also wonder if we didn't have anybody covering home if he was worried about.
I think he was worried if he threw to first and didn't get him, then we just take home and nobody was there to cover. Because the pitcher went to third and the catcher had chased up to third. Which is just weird.
Which, I mean, we made a mess of that, if we're being honest. Like,
a beautiful mess.
We made a mess. We were very fortunate that we made such a mess that Georgia didn't even know how to go about taking advantage of it.
It was genius, though. Curley stood on third until the guy was – I can't remember who was going home.
Dreiling, I think.
Was it Dreiling? Was about to touch, and then he just rushes back and then waves the guy back.
You could tell Eliader is the third base coach. He's standing there. He has no idea what
he
to tell them.
He had no
He's
idea.
He's just like, I don't know what you guys are doing, but I'm pretty sure it's not supposed to be like this. And it ended up working out.
That was all ad-libbed.
That's crazy, man.
You got to have high-level awareness, guys, to pull off
something. Did
that
lead
like
to a grand slam?
It did, I think.
That's what I thought.
Bargo
yeah.
was up not long after.
I tell you, man, Bargo comes up. How many does that make for? Was that his first this year?
Bargo,
we are absolutely crushing the baseball.
Oh yeah, we've tied the record for grand slams in a season.
Burt tied the
yep
the home run record.
Well, I think we're just going to have to outscore some people.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a wild season. Buckle up, Buttercups. There's going to be some games and probably towards the end of the season where either if our bats don't show up, we're probably going home, or we're going to be in some games like we were on that Saturday game.
Well, and moving Bargo to third, like I didn't even know that was an option. I knew he was a catcher utility guy, so I'm thinking catcher, first base, maybe a little bit of left field. I didn't know he could play third.
His arm that good?
But all of a sudden you stick him there, and I think if our pitching is going to be this questionable, then Tony's just going – we're going to have to outscore people, and we all like Antigua as a prospect, but I don't think he's gotten a hit yet. Or if he has, he's like one for a lot of at-bats. And I think that you're just going to have to try and put up with – some possible defensive shortcomings because we have the potential to be dangerous 1 through 9 in the batting order.
Yeah. And you only have to worry about this as long as Amick is out too.
Well, yeah, it gets better. But, I mean, you've got a good problem now because Bargo and Villeneuve both have to be in the lineup. And I guess what I'm getting at, I keep coming back to, if it's me, I'm telling Tony how to do his business. He's obviously doing something right, but I'm putting Tears in center. And then to get my three best outfield bats in there. That's just me.
Who you sending to the bench?
Inslee. I don't want to put it out there like that, but.
The guy who's been with him?
Well, and Inslee is hitting, I feel like, 280 or something.
He's getting better.
He's okay. Start. But I think we all agree. It's when you see his name in the order and you can't have Villeneuve, Bargo.
Can we
both
not afford
bench,
not
right?
to have his glove out in the outfield?
I mean, Tears looks pretty good to me. I don't think he hasn't made any errors in center, has he?
He made a nice play on Saturday in the outfield.
Down the right field line, yeah. The dive. Yeah, that was a good play. Tears up to 413.
Tearing the cover off it.
Tears is tearing.
And Tennessee now with, make sure I get my count right, 4 players with double-digit home runs.
Where at Burke? I mean, are you feeling more and more comfortable about where he's at right now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right now he's hitting home runs or doubles. Like, I'll take it.
Whatever was wrong, like, that's in the rearview mirror?
I think so. I think he's just been much more patient, driving the ball opposite field, just seeing it and hitting it hard. Home runs will happen.
So he looks like he's having fun playing. It didn't look like he's having a whole lot of fun last year.
He's got his swagger back. He's got a little confidence, and that's good to see. At Auburn this week. No midweek game. And then back home for LSU.
Yeah, and LSU, by the way, has not impressed.
They've had a terrible really hard schedule, haven't they?
Mississippi State was their first series.
Mississippi State, Florida, and then Arkansas?
Yeah. And those two on the back end are difficult, but I don't know about Mississippi State.
Okay. Stay with us. The drive continues. Hour number 2 coming up next right here on Fan Run Radio.